This episode of the Halloween Podcast is brought to you by Acorns, the app that invests your change automatically. If you're like me, you have zero inside of your savings for future you. What Acorns does is rounds up all of your debit card purchases and invests that change for you automatically. I got started months ago and my account is slowly growing for future me. I didn't even notice it coming out of my bank account. It's that subtle. Support the Halloween Podcast by signing up using our link. You get a $5 sign-on bonus, and so do we. Just go to thehalloweenpodcast.com/acorns, click on the banner, and get signed up. That's thehalloweenpodcast.com/acorns. Now let's get the show started. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Halloween Podcast. I am your host, Lyle Perez, and on today's show, I have the ladies from Revisiting Sunnydale with me, Camila and Marcella. How are you guys doing?
You're doing great. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Marcella, how are you doing?
I'm also well, thank you. I'm excited to be here and get into Blade.
Yes, because that is the topic of this episode. We are going to be talking about the 1998 movie Blade, starring Wesley Snipes. This movie came out on August 21st, 1998, so it fits right into its 90s Halloween countdown, which I hope you guys are enjoying. This is episode 13, so I've been doing this for a few days now, and it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. So, Revisiting Sunnydale, what can you guys tell me about that show?
Well, first and foremost, it's about Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the show. And we had decided years ago that we were going to, I mean, we've already watched the show like 1,000 times over, but we went back to Sunnydale one episode at a time and are reviewing and snarking and like giving our opinions and whatnot all on each episode of the show. We're on season 6 right now, and we've had some cool interviews and guests as well. And so, like, yeah, we've just been working our way through.
Well, awesome. Who have you guys had?
We have had Simon Guerre, which I forget how to pronounce his name. He's an author from of this awesome infographics book called Slayer Stats, which just gives all the stats about Buffy the Vampire Slayer. It's a must-have for any fan. We've had Nicholas Brendon. We've had who played Xander. Dagny Kerr, who played the annoying roommate Kathy. We had Andrew Ferchlin, I believe he was our very first guest.
Yep.
Who was the anointed, aka the annoying one. So yeah, we've been having a lot of fun.
Awesome. Yeah, I used to
watch it. It's nice to get a chance to talk to them and talk not just about their history on the show, but getting into a little bit about what they like and what they do, and it's a nice little conversation to have with them.
Yeah, it's always fun when you get to talk to people from something you've watched numerous times. It's kind of like this weird feeling of you just get this sense that, hey, they're just regular people like us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's so weird. So weird. But yeah, so if you guys want to check that out, go to where can they find your podcast?
Just about anywhere you can get your podcast, except for Spotify. So the actual website is revisitingsunnydale.com, and we're on Apple, Google Podcasts, Libsyn.
You can ask Alexa to find us.
iHeart, Player FM. Yeah, so everywhere except Spotify.
Perfect. So if you're a Buffy the Vampire Slayer fan, you need to check out this podcast.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. All right, so let's get into the topic. We are talking about Blade. So what kind of memories do you guys have about Blade?
Well, first and foremost, I'm pretty sure this is the year that I moved to Pittsburgh and moved in with Marcella. And mm-hmm. I think this is probably even the exact month that I did. And this is our first movie theater experience. Yeah.
Yeah.
Together.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, we saw it when it came out. And then, yes, I believe we saw it 3 more times after that.
Exactly. Like, this is one of my higher ranking films that I've seen multiple times in the theater.
Yeah.
And it's always been, and Marcella, who had a much better car than I did at the time, like, she would rock that, like, we would drive around and she would rock the soundtrack.
Oh, I rocked the soundtrack from the day it came out till about 2005. I still was rocking this soundtrack.
Man, I completely forgot all about soundtracks. Like, that's something that I don't hear anymore.
Right. No.
It's like, it's all about the scores now, if anything. And I don't know if that's just because I'm older. I'm an old lady.
Right. And I think that might be because we just have Spotify and, you know, Amazon Music and Apple Music. Soundtracks like this, they were just curated playlists, basically. Right. Like, there was no original music on this soundtrack. It was just a very well curated playlist.
Right.
And that is what Spotify and Apple Music do for us now. We don't really need soundtracks to do it.
Right. No. And of course, we also had our, because at the time, Deacon Frost was our favorite vampire, was our favorite vampire. Stephen Dorff did the thing. And so he decorated many a wall.
Yes, many a wall that was printed on dot matrix paper from my very first. It wasn't Dell. What was the that had the Cal print? What computer company has it? It was like
Gateway.
Yes, it was a Gateway. That was my computer first
nerd. Yeah.
It was the very first computer I ever bought myself, and all I had was a dot matrix printer that somebody gave me. Nice. And I would print out pictures of Deacon Frost and hang them on my wall.
Yeah. Dot matrix paper is so 90s right there.
Isn't it? I had to tear the little perforations off the side before I could hang it.
Yeah, and one weird thing is that, like, as far as I know, car dealerships still use dot matrix stuff for their contracts.
Yes, they do.
Can't you get something more high tech? I don't get it. But if you don't know what dot matrix paper is, I don't think you should be listening to this countdown.
No.
None of this will resonate with you at all.
No.
So yeah, so our love and memories for this movie runs deep.
Yeah. Well, I remember watching this as a kid. I was, 98? So I had to have been 12, 13, somewhere around there. So this was right up my alley. A 13-year-old boy, vampires, right, and Wesley Snipes beating the snot out of people. Like, it's something that I liked. And at the time, Wesley Snipes was doing pretty well.
Yeah.
Demolition Man was out at the time. What else was out? Major Leagues. He wasn't in that. He was in a few things.
He had a lot of, and you know, like, To Wong Fu with Love. Mm-hmm. He was also had a small but very poignant role in Waiting to Exhale, which is like probably one of the things that I most remember him by. Because Wesley Snipes is an actor, is not someone that I've ever really gravitated towards, aside from Blade. There have been certain roles that he has done he's done very well. But yeah, he was a big name at this point in time.
Yeah, and then from what I can remember, after this, I don't really remember him in anything else other than Blade.
Well, he did have that run-in with the law because of his taxes, so he wasn't really doing much for a while.
Yeah.
Problems.
But he did, if you haven't seen, I think it's the Dolomite movie with Eddie Murphy that's on Netflix. Right. Wesley is in that, and he is phenomenal.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was also in The Expendables. I remember him that one. Mm-hmm. And I think he's supposed to be in Coming to America.
Yes, he is.
The second one. So I so can't wait for that one. I am so excited to see that one for some reason. I don't know why.
Will be interesting. It's definitely interesting. It's like, what, 30 years later?
Yeah. I'm cautiously optimistic. I'm hoping that it wasn't a lightning in a bottle situation.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, I don't know. I've always wanted to see a second one to that movie. That movie kills me. And Eddie Murphy is just fantastic in that movie.
He is. It is a good movie. But again, like, yeah, Marcel is saying, like, a lightning in a bottle. Like that was 80s.
Yeah.
And it's like, we missed the mark. We shall see.
We shall see. But yeah, I don't know. Let's move on because I think we're going off the rails. All right. So So yeah, those were my memories. I watched it as a kid. Totally pumped. I think I saw it with my dad. It's one of those things that my dad took me. I don't know if he took me to it or we just rented it. Either or, one of the very small fond memories I have of my dad, as we were watching Blade, and then my brothers too were watching it. But yeah, I was totally jazzed, excited. I've seen this movie 1,000 times, and it was fun revisiting it because it really made me think of how cheesy a lot of this stuff is, how cheesy the 90s were, and it was awesome.
Oh yeah, for sure. The one thing that always gets me about this movie is it does not get its proper credit for being a Marvel film.
That is right.
You know, and it kind of kicked off the, you know, it showed that a Marvel film could be a box office hit and that a grown-up comic movie could be a hit.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't often get that credit. And I actually found out that Stan Lee filmed a scene in this movie, but it was cut. Which, yeah. Who cut Stan Lee from a film?
How dare you?
I mean, yeah. At the time, he wasn't known for doing the cameos, was he?
I'm not sure. This probably would have been the first one.
It would
maybe
have had to have been, yeah.
But who cut Stan Lee from a film?
Stan E. Lee. Like, right. I don't...
And it was the scene right at the beginning of the movie after at the blood rave, which I don't really understand how the setup of this blood rave was going to work.
Okay.
Is he the only human
in
that room?
Yeah, like, was he supposed to feed all you guys? Because yeah. I feel...
Well, so we're getting into the movie itself, and the first scene, they're doing, like, the vampires are having this humongous rave, and I never remember parties ever being like this. Do you guys at all?
I sure never got invited to a party like this.
I mean, minus the blood, yeah, I've been to raves. So.
But were they like that? I mean, I don't know. That just seems so foreign to me.
Like, I don't know what you mean by that. I mean, there were no human sacrifices that I was aware of.
I think, like, nobody stripped down to their underwear while they were dancing.
Yeah, totally, yeah. Yep, that was...
It's so weird, but yeah, I don't know if that one human was supposed to feed everyone. Like, I don't know.
And is it actual blood coming out of the sprinklers? Because that seems wasteful to me.
It does. Maybe it was like cow blood or something where they need human blood.
But this is like one of the best non-opening scenes. Because I always forget, like as many times as I've seen this movie, I always forget that there is a scene before this. So it's very as quick as it is. But it's like nobody cares. But like this whole rave scene is like one of the best, and like the music and like how that's the song that always gets me pumped in this mm-hmm. film. And then that break when the break
when Donald Logue comes in,
yes, when Quinn rolls, like dun, 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 it just
and like this so was fun. Made for me. this is my jam.
Yeah, the one thing that I don't get about this scene is we know that vampires are supposed to have superhuman strength, and there is literally I would say easily 400 of them inside of that building all at one time, and they all scatter when they see Blade. If they all would just jump him, I'm pretty sure they can beat the crap out of Blade.
It's like old Bruce Lee films. Why do you attack one at a time when you could just all pounce on him?
Right.
I'm sure he couldn't defend against that many people.
He didn't have that many tricks and toys up his sleeve as to where he would have been able to have gotten everybody if they all got it.
Right?
Yeah, so that's when I was watching that scene now, like as a kid, I was like, yeah, you get him, Blade. Beat the crap out of everybody. And now I'm just like, why don't they all just jump him? Like, I really don't get it.
Mm-hmm. It made me laugh because there's, you know, once he gets Quinn up against the wall, he's got this moment where, you know, up until this point, we're like, yes, this is going to be hardcore. And then he shoots Quinn with those two stakes and pins him to the wall. And he does that dumb, yes.
That Home Alone. He pulls a Home Alone.
Yeah.
He does.
And I'm like, oh, wait, what kind of movie is this going to be? Is it supposed to be funny or is it supposed to be, I don't know what I'm in for.
Well, the movie was rated R, so I thought there would have been less stuff for kids and more stuff for adults, but apparently not.
No, and it's not really a thing that Blade does the rest of the movie either. It's like a weird flash of emotion that we don't really get the rest of the movie.
He loves his job. This man was showing some pure joy in that moment. And he's like, finally, yes.
So the scene where all the cops come in and find Quinn attached to the wall, that is apparently the scene that Stanley was in and they cut him from.
It was probably because it was probably some like kooky phrase that they had him saying, which is usually the point, or it's usually his point when he shows up. And it was probably something like, "Has anybody got any s'mores?" And
yes.
You know, this just doesn't really flow with what we're doing.
Yeah, it feels like that would have been the perfect time for him to just pop his face and then off he goes.
So I'm hoping they're doing a remake of Blade with Mahershala Ali, which, yes, I'm in for that.
Yeah, sure.
I'm hoping maybe they can take whatever footage they filmed of Stan and somehow CGI it into this new Blade that's coming. Fingers, you know, somehow. You know, work your magic, Hollywood. That's what you do.
That's what all the computers and stuff do it. You guys get paid the big bucks.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure they have a ton of footage of them that they can definitely use.
But yeah, Mahershala, that's going to be nice, hopefully.
Yeah, I didn't know they were remaking it. It must have just passed my head.
Yeah, at the past, I think the last, whatever big event they had, they did all their Phase 4 announcements, and then they brought him out, and they were like, guess what? He's here. And he just put a Blade hat on, and everyone went nuts.
Wow. Chills. I got chills.
Yeah, it was great. Now, the other people that were up for the, apparently were interested in the role, were Idris Elba, which, okay, that's fine. I'd have been fine with that. Adewale, and I cannot pronounce the rest of his name, he was Mr. Echo on Lost, and he was on Oz. Yeah, he would have been also acceptable.
Right.
And then John Boyega, which I like John Boyega, but I think he's too boyish for this.
Yeah, not for this. No.
John, she's not right.
I need you to go back in your lane, honey. Go on.
Yeah. For whatever reason, in an action movie, we get this weird... How did you guys feel about this weird introduction to Karen and the hospital staff?
Knowing all her business? It reminded me a lot of Men in Black.
Yes. The useless... coroner's office?
Yes.
Yes.
That's exactly what I thought when I saw it again. I was like, oh, okay, yeah, Men in Black. I never made that reference when I was a kid. I guess because I was just, let's get some more vampire ass kicking.
Right, yeah. Kill the vampires!
Kill the vampires!
It was just more like, okay, I don't know if I need to be this deep in Karen's love life, but let's keep it moving. But what's
that
funny
guy
is
that, thirsty.
Well, what's funny is that guy, I don't know his name, and I've seen him in like a bajillion and one other things since Blade, and he's always that guy from
that
Blade.
Guy.
That's Karen's ex-boyfriend. It's in my head.
That's how I feel about the guy that plays Quinn. Every time I see him in anything, I'm always like, hey, he's that goofy vampire that gets his butt handed to him all the time.
It's amazing to me is that how little people realize his roots from MTV when he was Jimmy the cab driver.
Yep.
And I very much enjoy people. Just go ahead and Google MTV Jimmy the cab driver and be delighted.
Oh, wow, man. I never thought about doing anything MTV related for the countdown. There's got to be some MTV Halloween deal.
Oh, for sure. There had to be specials for Singled Out, Remote Control.
Oh, yeah.
I have to look into that for something later on.
I am your trivia girl, apparently, because I've got it coming out of my ears. One thing that I really liked about this movie was Wesley Snipes was a producer on the film. So he had a lot of say in, you know, what happened in directions and the direction that plot took and character development and things like that. And the studio, I guess, wanted Karen to be Caucasian. And he said no. He wanted her to be African American.
Which, so, awesome.
Yeah.
But
too bad you couldn't have got a better actress than Noobushi Wright.
Right. I'm Angela Bassett was a thing. She was
So was Lynn Whitfield.
Right. So, I mean, come on now. Come on, son. Like Angela Bassett was like very. She already proven herself as a action star or whatever. In Strange Days?
Strange Days, yeah.
Or an action.
Event Horizon. Was she in Event Horizon?
I don't know. I have very limited memories of that movie. But yeah, so just like, I think Nabushi is the weak link in this film.
They could have definitely hired somebody else. The budget was $45 million, so they definitely had the money to...
Yeah.
Right, to get someone a little higher caliber. But she, talk about being in the wrong place at the wrong time. Poor Karen. She's just trying to do her job.
That's usually what happens. Just someone's trying to do their job and you just get mixed in some stuff.
I went to work. I just wanted to do my job and I got thrown to the building next door.
Not only like sexually harassed first, like that was the first part of her day. But there was also like, I feel like her reaction time was a lot slower than it could have been. She stood there the whole time while old dude got attacked. She could have been home by then. By the time
I would have been home by then. The second he sat up, sorry, I have to go. I hear my phone.
What's that? Yes, letter of resignation. Bye.
Yeah, I ain't doing that no more.
Right.
I wonder how people in morgues deal with that. Like, because I know I hear stories all the time of like bodies sitting up, weird noises, and I don't think I could handle that.
No.
Can you imagine the amount of underwear they must go through? Because I mean,
can you imagine the amount of pranks they must play on each other?
Oh my gosh, it has to be a thing where they signed a contract that says can't do that because you can probably give someone a heart attack.
Right? Can you imagine just trying to do your job and then a corpse sits up?
Yeah. I have this vague memory of like some movie where that happens and the coroner just comes up and like just lays them down. No big deal.
That might be my reaction.
Just lay him back down.
And then run. Like, no.
And before, like, and I'm at home, and I think I may have saw the corpse sit up. I'm not 100% sure. Like, that would be me telling this. It's like,
you're packing your bags as you're putting them in the car. There may be.
May have been. I'm not 100% sure, but I think I saw by the corner of my eye.
Now, my number one question at this point in the film is, why? I mean, I guess because he wants to use her as bait, but it's like, why does he have to take her? Why didn't you just leave her there and just go about your day? Do you really think they're going to come back for her? She's nobody.
I think he might have feelings
for her.
But
they do indeed come back.
He was catching some feelings real quick.
She's cute.
She is very pretty in this film. Mm-hmm. Like, her weave is phenomenal. But... And you know, she like there's a one scene of her, I think, when she's in the elevator when she's on her way home, and it's like perfectly lit and her makeup is flawless and she looks really cute. Yeah. But that acting, man, it's just really loose.
Yeah. But I think of the next scene is where we start, we see the council, the vampire council.
We meet the council for the first time, and we meet one of my favorite character actors, Udo.
Oh, that dude is amazing. I'm always, always happy to see him. No matter what the film is, no matter what it is. A commercial? Sure. Hey, Udo, how you doing?
Yeah, he's always the dude from Ace Ventura.
Yes. And he just chews scenery. Like, everything he's in, he just chews the scenery.
Handsome devil, though.
Oh, yeah. Wears a suit very well. What I enjoy about this scene is it's our first, it's the first time we hear Deacon Frost speak, which, hello, sir. But the gall of this man, you're a young vampire on a council of elders. I don't know how you got your seat firsthand, but you have no respect for anyone on this council.
Yeah, I think he just got was able to request an audience with them, and that was it. Like, I don't think he has a seat on there at all. It's just like they brought him in to talk to him about his little nightclubs and how they're effing things up for the rest of them. And he's like, he's just really got his panties in a bunch about the whole, it's like, I'm just as good as you.
Because he wasn't, they are all purebloods. Everyone on that council is a pureblood, and he was bitten and turned, which Udo loves to throw in his face.
Every chance he gets. Mm-hmm.
But the way Deacon, I should say, just gets in his face on that table, like he doesn't care at all. This man is your boss, basically.
Right.
And you're just going to get a couple inches from his face?
Like, who raised you?
It's the whole defiance of the 90s right there. Mm-hmm. Defying your the elders.
He's a bad boy. Mm-hmm. He's a bad boy, boy band, moosey hair.
So I'm assuming you guys like him.
Yes.
Maybe a little.
So would you let him turn you instantly?
Oh, for sure. I probably would have, yeah. Yeah, it would have. It would have absolutely. Like, uh-huh, sure. Although he would have had to step, put a couple boxes up to reach me.
Right.
Sure, let me come down.
He's a tiny little fellow.
Down to your level, Deacon.
But he's got the confidence and the swagger.
Yes. Yes, he does.
He does.
And although, I mean, it's still the whole vampire thing, like it intrigues me to some extent, but like the scene where they're at his party and they like whip the neck out of the police officer and like, there's blood everywhere. It's just, I'm like, I feel that's a little wasteful because yeah. I love me some chocolate cake, but there's no way I would eat chocolate cake like that. Like,
right, you're not just going to walk up and shove the chocolate cake in your face.
Just smear it all over.
Is it ever mentioned how much they actually need to survive?
No. I don't think I've ever encountered that.
In any lore.
In any.
So maybe like, they just need like a couple of ounces and they're good.
Right. And most of this is just for show. It's just like we like to put on a really good show.
And actually the only thing I can think of that has any type of stipulation behind what you can and can't eat is Interview with the Vampire. They can't drink dead blood.
Right.
But that I think is the only time I've ever encountered a stipulation on feeding.
Yeah, I mean, I hear them substitute like the animal blood every now and then.
Right.
Yeah, pig blood.
Or true blood.
True blood, yeah. True that blood was has fake. Synthetic.
Synthetic.
So, yeah, I don't think I've ever heard of there being any real stipulations as to what you can and can't do.
Right. I mean, on Angel, on Angel, he was trapped underwater for what, all summer? Like 3 months? Without anything?
Yes. Continually kept drowning and resuscitating. Horrible summer. Can you imagine you just died like 500 times over there? What'd you do this summer? Well, let me tell you.
So where are we at now? We're at...
Nabushi's kind of walking around learning, figuring out, you know, she's woken up, they're telling her she's learning things about Blade, she's figuring out why the heck she's still here and hasn't gone home. And Whistler is, it's so many, there's so many weird scenes. Like, do they just own this whole warehouse or are they squatting here where Whistler has all his toys?
Before he even met Blade. Like, that was just his spot anyway.
There has to be a bigger explanation of who's funding a lot of this stuff.
Right. Where's this money coming from? Because Whistler doesn't seem to care about self-grooming. So I'm assuming he may just spend all his money on his fabulous toys.
Yeah, and that car that Blade had, the Charger, I mean, that's not cheap.
Charger. No, not cheap at all, and it's 68? A modified one, too, yeah.
So that's not cheap, and I mean, I guess maybe they could be thieves?
Well, we do get that quick scene of Blade, you know, Blade has to take this serum, so because he's got, as they will famously say a little later, all of the strengths and none of the weaknesses. But he still has to feed. So he has this serum that he takes, but he needs a special extract from a herbalist, I'm going to say, that he goes to see. Huh?
Is that what that plant is? Because that's the one thing in this whole...
No, I don't know what the heck that plant was. It just sits on the shelf and it's all pretty. And he ends up destroying it later, I think. But he goes to this man and he pays the man with watches that I'm assuming he stole.
Oh, from the bodies of the vampires.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's how he pays for that. So maybe just small time crime is funding this.
Yeah, because you know he takes that police officer's.
Well, yeah, he's mad because it's fake.
Yeah, an old girl is like, "Are you gonna rob me too?" No.
No, he's just gonna destroy your apartment for no good reason. There are several things in this movie that would not fly in today's society. Particularly the scene where Blade is accosting a cop in broad daylight.
Right? That's the one thing I mentioned last time. I was like, this is a black man in the middle of, I guess, New York in broad daylight, like beating up like to a pulp a white police officer.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Wow. Wow.
And then pulling out a gun in broad daylight.
Yeah. Blade. Sure.
And Officer Krieger, the only other place you guys will know Officer Krieger from is he played Stephen Orth in Scream. He was the boyfriend at the beginning of the movie that got murdered, who I always thought was Matthew Perry for some reason.
Oh, wow, that's true.
Can recognize, but yeah, like his little, his bright eyes. He's got really pretty eyes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What a role he had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We got you in the slasher movie. Oh, but you don't say anything and you're the first one dead. Dang.
Right. Okay. All you say is, that's your line.
And that's it. Sure, sign me up. I wonder how much they paid him for that. Couldn't have been that much.
No.
Imagine, but yeah.
Scream services, that's it.
Before this, right?
Yeah, Scream, I believe, was 96.
Yeah, 96?
I think so. But yeah, Scream, that's a whole other topic. I'm doing that with Lassa later, listeners. In case you're ready for some Scream action, it's going to come soon. So where are we at?
So we've got like the pretty good point where Frost is, you know, he's doing some learning. He's boning up on some old text and whatnot. And again, we've got Udo, who is not having it. He's just there to, hey, remember, you're not a pureblood. Just kind of shows up every so often to just kind of poke at him about it.
And
what's weird though is he tells him that's never going to work. But if you would look at the monitor, he's clearly translating it. Right. It is working. Why are you being so mean? Because it's clearly working.
Because he's old and he's like computers. Those things don't work. Yeah. Like this is a fad.
Stuck
like
in I don't his understand. Ways.
Back in my day. Yes.
800 years ago, we didn't have any of this stuff.
We took stone to stick, and we knocked everything out.
You and your electricity. In my day, we were always in the dark. During the day, they would have to be in the dark. There is no... Oh, well. I don't know. They can't know. That's the whole point of this movie, is that they want to walk in the sun.
Right. And then briefly, Deacon gets to that with like a buttload of suntan lotion.
Sunscreen.
Yeah, like
sure, that works.
I don't get that either. Like, what is it about the sun that actually kills them?
I thought it was something about the UV rays.
Yeah, the ultraviolet rays.
I don't know what it has to do with their makeup and their chemistry per se.
So, does the sunblock really stop all of those things?
I don't know. I've never used sunblock. I don't know. I don't know how that works.
Interesting. But yeah, they had to have tested it on somebody else. I don't think he would have been brave enough to be like, yeah, sure, let me put this on and see, walk and see if
yeah,
I can
exactly.
do it.
No, Stevens or Deacon's not about that. Mm-hmm. About that guinea pig life.
Nope.
But it is a good scene between him and Udo. Where,
oh, yeah. I think they won an MTV award for like the longest pause or something.
Right.
Uncomfortable pause.
Because I think about it every time I see that scene. Uh-huh. I was like, it is a considerably long time that he just waits.
Like, oh no, you didn't just slap me in the face. And then he like pulls his shirt, like, okay, all right, I've got to compose myself.
You're in public, let's calm down, just relax.
And then he like gently swipes his finger down Udo's neck, and Udo just gets kind of freaked out and leaves.
I'm like, oh, at that point, it's like, are we trying to seduce him now? Like, why are you guys going to make out? What's happening? What is happening right now? And it was like, you bore me. And then he leaves.
Sick burn. In. I'll watch. The scene that makes no sense to me is right after that at Karen's apartment. She finally, they let her go home. And she's on the elevator with those two people that we know. We kind of figure out something's up because they have the neck tattoos. What do they want? They don't go to her apartment. They get in the elevator all creepy with her. The one guy's like, how you doing? And she doesn't even answer him, which rude. He could have at least said, good. You? But no, she just turns around. And then they get out of the elevator with her, follow her down the hall. And when she turns around to be strong with her garlic spray, they're gone. Were they, I meant to look again today to see if, because they're familiar tattoos. I'm not sure they're the same as Deacon's mark.
They're not.
So were they someone else's familiars? And why were they there?
They're somebody else's. They're not the same mark. I don't know.
So that's an unresolved plot point, is who are these people?
Hmm.
And they bounced.
I don't know. I'm trying to think of who could... Why would anyone do that with her?
Well, do you think maybe Quinn had some familiars? And they worked for Quinn. And then this guy shows up on scene who's Deacon's familiar. And obviously Deacon higher outranks Quinn. And so he's like, yo, I got this. Deacon sent me.
I would think Quinn's minions would still fall under Deacon. Because he falls under Deacon. So they probably fall under the same umbrella. I was wondering if Udo sent someone to figure out.
Udo was aware of this aspect of what had happened.
And they're both very good looking people, but they're just kind of pointless. I guess it's just to set up what happens in her apartment.
Yeah, maybe to build up suspense for the viewer. I really don't think they had anything to do with the actual story itself.
Which, there's a lot of marble going on in this apartment building. It looks like a bank hallway.
That's what I was thinking, too. I was like, I think I see somebody's name on a door as we go by. Like,
this is Jessica Jones's. And I don't know why, after what just happened to you the past 24 hours, you don't lock your door when you get home.
Right.
She just walks in her apartment and closes the door. She does not lock it, which is how stupid Officer Krieger gets in.
Yeah, gets in, starts pretending like he's all like, oh, I'm here to talk about your friend that got bitten.
Curtis Webb.
Yeah.
And she's very confused and unsure of why, you know, why are you really here? What are you doing here? And she sprays him with her garlic mace. And he is really upset about it. And I really do love that, you know, Blade shows up and saves her. And, you know, it just continues. They're using him as bait. And they go, and it leads us to Pearl, which is the most disgusting 700-pound latex vampire.
Oof.
I had nightmares about that guy.
He reminds me of the one demon on Buffy.
Right.
In season 3.
Where it's just a big old sloth.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just like this big, just disgusting thing. And I don't fully understand why we have to have this giant 700-pound vampire.
Mm-mm. Like, what is its role?
He's the records keeper,
I
think.
He's the records keeper, yeah. Yeah.
But and he also can't move. Like...
Right. Which, I mean, I guess, you know, it's a good thing computers became a thing for him. Because... I guess he doesn't really have to. But then he's also, like, kind of in charge of all of these, like, tapestries and stuff from the old vampire books and whatnot. Which I feel like there's a way to store those, but okay.
Right? And for some reason, Whistler can read them, but they need a computer program to translate it for them. Why not just kidnap Whistler, torture him until he talks, and let's go from there.
Yeah, I don't know. That thing just terrorized me as a kid. But when they finally killed it, that kind of made me even more scared of him.
Right? Seeing him all bloodied. So rude. Yeah. I felt so bad for Pearl because he only told her to blast him if he moved. Well, Pearl didn't really move, and she just nuked him.
She was feeling froggy. She had some stuff that she was trying to work out.
She wanted to see if it really worked. She was just testing out the equipment.
Right, because she has this look on her face like, oops.
He moved.
Like, okay.
I love that him and Deacon were FaceTiming, though.
That's true.
I do enjoy the fact that this little girl comes in and starts kicking some major butt. Like, she really has no other purpose in this film.
Yeah.
I mean, it's cool and everything, but it's also like, was she a vampire? Or was she just... Like,
we only see her... In two scenes. She's in the scene at right before that at Deacon's party. She's sitting on the floor and he walks past her. And then she runs around in there and kicks Blade's butt. One of my favorite scenes in the movie is the sunrise scene with sunscreen. Even though I just really like the way it was shot. You know, the stark, like, you can see the sunrise happening. You know, it starts off real pale and blue, and then, you know, they do really bad things to Udo.
You know, like in the 90s, I remember there was this vampire commercial for like sunglasses. I don't know if you guys ever seen that one. It reminds me of. That's what reminds me of that. All of the vampires are sitting there chilling, watching the sunset, and one dude, like, he can't find his glasses.
Yes.
And then everyone's making fun of him because he can't find them and he burns up.
Man, like the 90s were all about the vampires, weren't they?
Definitely were.
Spilled over into the commercials.
And that's kind of what happens here. He couldn't find his sunglasses, I guess. And they all put their motorcycle helmets on and he blows up.
Yeah. Which,
as far as like vampire deaths go, like throughout movies and television shows and stuff, this is by far one of the best like ways that they expire. Like the computer animation that goes on with this, it's like the fire and then the bones and then the ash, and it's just like,
yeah,
it's so perfect.
And in Dragon Eddie's defense, he was not a punk. He not once did he beg for his life. You'll never win. He didn't care. He went out strong.
It's like, it was a good 900 years.
That was a good run.
Even though they took his teeth from him.
Yeah. And I think they were making fun of him for saying, how is he going to eat? And I'm like, can't you just drink? Do you need to necessarily bite? It's just more vampire lore that I just don't understand. Like, there's so much of it out there that it just doesn't make sense once you really start picking it apart, and you're just like, I don't get it.
Right. So, like, yeah. So this one, the vampires, the lore in this one is that, you know, sunlight, UV rays, that kills them. Garlic, apparently, and silver, which silver isn't something that's usually talked about with vampires. It's usually for werewolves. Mm-hmm. And Blade also mentions that holy water and crosses don't do anything for them.
Yeah.
So in this one, it's more like a virus than it is a religious thing.
Right. Yeah. And they even talk about how these guys, they have souls still. Like, these vampires still have souls.
And Karen's sole purpose in this movie, once we find out conveniently that she's a hematologist, she is going to cure herself, because they injected her with garlic at the, you know, once they first brought her back to the compound, but it didn't work. And she's still turning. She's still in the process of turning. And because she's a hematologist, she says, oh, no, that's not going to happen. I'm going to cure myself.
Right.
And that's what she's working on. And they think that they can maybe come up with a cure for Blade, which, no, thank you. I'm good.
Why would they want to cure the only person probably keeping the vampires at bay?
Mm-hmm. Right. I don't know. I feel like he just has a lot of self-hate happening. There's some psychological issues. It's like some really deep-seated stuff happening there. It's like, I don't like my life. I'm going to do this anyway, but yada yada.
I mean, what alternative does he have? Become a family man? Have a white picket fence? And
right.
Like, do you have dreams other than this, Blade? Like, is there something that you really want to do? Like, can we talk about it? Like,
Blade's future is a complicated issue in itself, because while he has their strengths and weaknesses, he also ages like a regular person. So he's eventually going to get old, but still be this strong and agile. He ages a little slower, maybe, but not. He's still going to get old, and he's still going to die.
Right.
You know, what future does he really have?
How old is he right now? He's got to be in like his mid 30s, I would say.
Probably. Yeah.
Around there at that time.
60s that he was born?
Yeah. So, yeah, he would have been around 30 something or other. Your golden years are gone, or your good years are gone.
And so. Whistler mentions that he found him when he was in his teens, like he was 13 or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was your life like up until you were 13? Were you a little toddler running around the orphanage biting people?
Oh, man. That's true.
Because you didn't have your serum, and you were born part vampire, so...
Maybe it's a thing that it didn't hit until puberty hit.
Sure. Okay, we can go with that.
Oh, okay.
Just go ahead.
Yeah.
We'll just suspend disbelief.
Okay.
Right.
Now, there's another favorite scene I have. I love the outdoor scene with the little girl, you know, when Deacon's, you know, he's like, your makeup's running. Love that scene. Even more do I love the scene when Deacon and his crew show up at the warehouse. When he smacks Whistler and tells him, oh, nice place. Took us a while to find it.
Right.
Favorite scene of Deacon in the whole movie.
Yeah. It's by far just like real. It's so good. And the whole like yelling just like, bah! And smacks. Yes.
Yeah. And Quinn is just, bleh. Quinn spends this whole movie like getting hurt, healing, getting hurt, healing, getting hurt, healing. He's always in a constant state of recuperation.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just gross to look at. But Deacon attacks, and they take Karen. Blade comes home, and he's real chill about just finding bodies in his house. You know, he finds a couple dead henchmen, and then he finds Whistler.
Right. Which is, it's sad, you know, but he also doesn't, it's almost like he doesn't want to admit how much he's feeling about Whistler's death.
But we find out he doesn't really die.
No! What is up with Whistler's history, though? It makes me tired. Like, so we think he kills himself here, but we find out in the second movie that he really was kidnapped by a bunch of vampires and taken to Serbia, and Blade has to save him, but then he blows himself up in the third one? I'm tired.
Yeah. So for the sake of, you know, theatrical, cinematic, just like mood building and whatnot, Whistler is dead. And so now Blade really has a reason to want to like kill Deacon. Now he's really in his feelings. And, you know, also he took Karen. Deacon has Karen. And this is another like great scene in the film where Karen is like being real, just like snotty about it. Like, I can cure myself. I can cure myself.
And real nasty to him too. Like, how'd you get that scar, Deacon? Vampire wouldn't have one.
She calls it vampirism and STD.
Yes.
Understandably so. Deacon gets a little in his feelings. And snaps out. Because at first he's like real cool and like trying to seduce her. Like, wait, it's like, you know, I bet Blade just not hitting it right, huh, girl? And then finally he just snaps out. He's like, okay, STD, too far. Far. Like,
he's real mad.
So that gets us closer to the end. What is it exactly that these vampires are trying to do to make them walk in the daylight? What exactly are they trying to do?
They're trying to conjure Lamagra.
The blood demon. The blood god.
The blood god. I'm not sure any of Deacon's minions really looked into what this sacrifice event was going to do, because it wasn't really going to make them any stronger. It was just going to make Deacon stronger. He was going to turn him into the blood god. And then I don't know what the plan was from there.
Well, he mentioned something before about how the blood god will, you know, walk past anybody and he'll go through and turn everybody into a vampire. Okay.
Well, what are you going to eat?
What? Yeah. Why do we want that? Exactly.
And it takes me to Spike in season 2 when he's like, I like this world. You've got Manchester United, Piccadilly Circus. You know, some vampires just want to cause chaos and end the world, but I like to eat.
Right.
So you know, I like humans.
Walking around like Happy Meal on legs.
Right. If everybody's a vampire, are you going to be cannibals then?
Right. Because there's also like a strange point, like, because they need these 12 pureblood vampires to sacrifice. And then the one little blonde girl, she gets a little attitude with one of them and kills him.
Mm-hmm. So now you've got 11.
You're short one. You cannot finish this ceremony. What's happening? Mm-hmm.
That guy always kind of seemed like the attaché to the council to me, though. So I'm not sure if he was really an elder. He just seemed like maybe the secretary.
He was just kind of there.
He was
anyway,
there.
Wasn't even, he didn't have a pedestal to stand on anyway.
Yeah.
He was just there. And I guess Blade's blood is the key to all this as well. As part of the sacrifice. So, yes.
So, yeah. And then they capture him and put him inside this blood draining machine.
Which, woof.
Pretty freaky.
Well, it's really funny. He goes there all puffed up with his new weapon that Karen made, which is this concoction that will make vampires' blood explode.
Mm-hmm.
And he does. He beats up a bunch of people. There are some vampires that explode, like the one of the guys in Big Trouble in Little China.
Mm-hmm.
They just swell up and then poof, they explode. Yep. Mm-hmm. And then he gets caught because they finally realize that they could use tasers. And we get a happy, happy, happy family reunion with Blade and his mom.
Surprise! Blade's
and
mom.
And it turns into a soap opera all of a sudden, because it turns out that Deacon is Blade's dad, theoretically speaking.
Yes.
Weird love triangle goes on here.
Yeah, so things get super awkward. Blade's got questions. He's very confused. He wants to know. Now he understands he's got all these daddy issues, and it's just...
And, you know, a lot of things happen, and then for whatever reason, they forgot to put guards at the door to the room where Blade is. Mm-hmm. Because Nibushi gets in there real easy.
Right.
Real easy. And she gets him out of his sarcophagus. It's very strange.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's how
conveniently they really only needed that much blood.
Most stories end up like that, where it's just an easy, hey, let's just release him, and then the end of the movie.
And Blade has to feed off of Karen. She lets him feed off of her, which I hope for her sake he just used the two holes that were already there. You know, because she didn't need a set of matching holes on the other side. Well, it, right. You know.
And this scene, it seems it's very aggressive.
Very aggressive.
Yeah, I remember that. Kind of touched me as a kid. So romantic it was.
It's like, oh, she loves him. Okay.
Man.
And then he's he's juiced.
Yeah.
He is juiced up from that point on, and everything happens very quickly.
Like, he lets out this, it's like zooms off. He's out. He's gone. And
he's got to kill his mom first.
Yeah.
That's a weird one right there.
She tried to shag him.
Yeah.
I was trying to avoid that, but.
It happens.
It does happen in the movie, and we get this really awesome fight scene, and then they face off. Deegan and Blade go at it.
Yes, and it is a wonderful. This, you see, the song at the beginning gets you amped. The song here gets me amped. I'm like, let's go! We're doing it! And they do it more than once, where he kills a bunch of people, and then he stops, and then they all burn.
Right.
And it's like, that's classy. That's right.
And then also when he's like in between killings, he's just yelling, Frost!
Yes. Now, did either of you think that Frost's henchmen looked remarkably like the Joker's henchmen in Batman?
Yes.
Like, did they get bulk beanie caps? Because they're all wearing black beanies, black leather jackets, black pants. It's all very black.
Yeah, it's the standard uniform.
Yeah, I don't know why they have to wear matching stuff.
Especially, like, what if it's hot? Like, where are they exactly?
Right.
Like, summertime?
And they're really bad at their jobs. Karen's able to sneak up on that one and take his gun and kill
blow him away, yeah.
Yeah.
Henchmen can't find good ones.
No. They're expendable.
They're very expendable.
They might as well be wearing red shirts.
Yeah.
But yeah, and then we get the fight scene. Deacon gets filled up with all of those things and he blows up.
Right.
Yeah,
which that's the point where I cut the movie off.
Aww.
Right before he turns into like the really gross creature thing. It's like, and we're done. That's how I liked it. I don't want to remember him like this, which is also similar to like when I watch Fright Night. Like, I cut it off, the remake of Fright Night. I cut it off right before Colin turns into like this gross creature at the end of his death scene.
Have you ever watched the alternate ending that was on the DVD?
Probably.
He actually turns into Lamagra and the blood goes over the entire city.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
So they actually the vampires actually win.
Mm-hmm. The vampires. They weren't sure they were going to get a sequel, so they decided to cut that aspect of it out and not continue with it. Which
made for a much better sequel. See them dealing with Lamagra.
Much, much better.
Yeah, but we got that one with Norman Reedus and
and some rando dude. I don't even know.
And Ron Perlman. Let's not forget Ron Perlman.
Totally forgot about Ron Perlman.
And Tony Curran, Tony Curran, he was on Doctor Who. He was Van Gogh. Wonderful, wonderful actor. But yeah, Blade 2 is not good. Not good. Just skip to Trinity.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would have to agree with that.
But do you get the feeling that Karen is kind of a bat love interest in this? Like, what happens to Karen? You know, she goes to Russia with him. At the end, we see Blade. No, she's not even in Russia. We see him in Russia without Karen. Did she just leave? Is she still working on stuff?
Probably what? Not. She's like, I'm cured.
She's supposed to be working on a more efficient serum for Blade.
Oh. So he's just like, it's not like he lives in Russia. He's just like, you know, he heard some stuff was happening there.
Yeah.
I think he may go to save Whistler. Maybe on his way to save Whistler in Serbia.
Yeah, I don't know what he's doing in Russia. I really don't.
It's but so weird.
He kills another vampire and end of the movie. Roll credits. That was one movie.
Yes.
Full of action, full of special effects.
Romance?
Yeah.
One might say.
I guess. I mean, that passionate bite scene was one for the ages.
Deacon has love with his blonde vampire and lots of other ladies in that awesome bed he had.
Yeah, the sloth vampire, yeah.
Frantic situation. Just like falling.
But anyways, that is Blade in a nutshell. So to kind of bring it back on... Oh, wait, do we have any more trivia? Anything left over that we want to discuss?
I think some of the most interesting part for me was that Jet Li was offered the part of Deacon Frost.
Jet Li?
Jet Li. But that he opted to do Lethal Weapon instead.
Thank you.
Okay, yeah, good, very good choice.
Right? Right? And the only other one I have was that Michael Morbius, I got this off of IMDb, Morbius, was planned to be used as the main antagonist for an eventual sequel, but was dropped due to the whole Spider-Man universe and Sony and all that complicated jazz that they had going on. Hmm. And so the vampire at the end on the rooftop in the first Blade, in the alternate ending, is supposed to be Morbius. So, fingers crossed, they'll be able to work Jared Leto's Morbius into Mahershala Ali's Blade.
Interesting.
Since they own everything now.
Right.
And this movie is very well liked on IMDb. I know that's kind of a thing that you look at the ratings on your podcast, and it gets a 7.1 out of 10. So for in my book, that's a pretty decent score.
Oh yeah, especially on IMDb for user right? reviews.
Yeah,
people hate on things.
Right.
that's where I would put it. I would put it at about a 7 out of 10. Mm-hmm. I don't think it deserves more. I don't think it deserves less. I think 7's about the right number.
7 out of 10. Deacon gets a 10 out of 10. Sure.
I'm gonna give it an 8 before my, you know, wild, my lady love part, like my girlish with my crushes all throughout. That's what I'm gonna give it. I'm gonna give it 8.
Gotcha. All right. So just to bring it a little bit more about your guys' show, let me ask you a couple of questions about the differences between these about Blade and Buffy. So the first one I got is, how are these vampires different from what we see in Buffy?
The allergies are different.
Right, and the way they die is different.
Okay, what about some of the
lore? I wish
Buffy
vampires had flames. That'd be great.
Yeah, so, and also the lore, like, well, we mentioned before, like, crosses and holy water do work against vampires in Buffy. Silver has no effect on Buffy vampires. They do.
No, they like their jewelry.
Yeah, they do. They do perish with garlic and sunlight, the usual, and beheading. You can't, and fire.
Yes, nope. You can set them on fire. And they don't like sunlight. They, you know, they claim to not like sunlight, but some of them every now and again are in very direct sunlight and nothing happens, but whatever. That's
right. Yeah, like sometimes they can get away with just like being covered in a blanket and walking across town and at noon in California and not bursting into flames.
Right. But I'd say the biggest difference between Buffy vampires and Blade vampires are that the vampires, and they're born. There are some that are born vampires. We do not have pure blood and kind of the STD vampires. Everyone, you know, Buffy's vampires are demons. They are from hell. You know, that's they are, and they infect. It's also an infection, you could say. They bite and infect a human who then dies and is then reborn a vampire. We don't have any that are DNA vampires.
Which is also different from Blade, because apparently you just need to be bitten and then you'll slowly turn.
Yeah.
But with Buffy, there's a whole ritual where you got to, you die.
You suck, I suck.
You got to be buried. Then you come back.
Yeah. You have to feed on them. You know, they suck your blood. You suck their blood. Then you die and you get buried. Then you come back. It's a whole process.
So it's very, very complicated to become a vampire. I can't just get bitten and become one.
Yeah. Right, exactly. So not the lazy man's vampire. And also the vampires in Blade are much more organized. They've got
councils.
Right.
They've nightclubs.
Henchmen, there's hierarchies, there's like these, as opposed to Buffy, they're just kind of like making it up as they go along.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, well, let's move on to the next one. So in the movie, Blade here, would he be considered as the Buffy? Like, you think their backgrounds are somewhat similar?
I would say in the fact that he didn't choose, like they're both the chosen ones, quote unquote, to do this task, but also like he could have gone either way. Like, he didn't have to necessarily be a good guy. He chose or was put on that proper path to be a good guy. Like, he could have done bad things with his power.
Mm-hmm. And who chooses them? What chooses them?
Well, Buffy is like some weird mythical thing of like
Council of Elder Men who decided they needed to take a young girl.
Yeah, but is it really them choosing them specifically, or is it like some mystical force?
I think it's more a mystical force that it's passed down.
Right. So nobody knows until no Slayer knows that she's a Slayer until she's called. Until it's like, oh, by the way, you're a Slayer. And some weird guy shows up and is like, hey, I'm your Watcher. And you're like, the who?
Shit. What? I need an adult.
I think if anything, Blade would be more similar to Angel on Buffy, because Angel is a vampire who has been cursed, quote unquote, with a soul. And so now he's got this soul, and now he chooses to do good because he can remember and feel all of the bad things that he's done centuries beforehand. And so
does that make Blade more Spike? Because Spike doesn't have a soul until later on, and he chooses to do good for the love of a woman, and because it's the only thing he can do because of his chip. But
I would say
he's still kind of bad at the same time, and Blade is kind of unethical in his ways.
Kind of, but it's still for the good of all people, I guess.
I guess Spike's more for the good of Spike.
Right.
All right, so let's move on to the next question. So we have this relationship with Whiskler and Blade. It's kind of like the same thing as with Giles and Buffy. Is this a common theme in vampire media? Like, do we see this more often, where there's somebody that knows what's going on and the other one just does all the legwork?
I would say it's not always as clear-cut as, like, Watcher-Slayer. I've just kind of jotted down just, like, a couple of the ones that I could think of off the top of my head. Like, Interview with the Vampire, you've got Lestat, who's supposed to be teaching Louis the ropes, but he doesn't really do a great job. Or, like, in The Lost Boys, their main guy, the big guy who's, like, their, quote, father figure.
Richard Gilmore?
Yeah. Right, who's supposed to be teaching them. But, like, in Fright Night, there isn't really one,
he's Jerry on his own.
Or is Jerry is the one?
No, Jerry's just kind of there for himself. He doesn't have a elder that kind of like is there as his confidant. He doesn't even mention one.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't even think of any. Like, I mean, Twilight had, you know, I mean, they were a family though, so it's not like Carlisle was smarter than anyone else. He just was a doctor. It's not like he was a confidant or a mentor. They did go to him for, you know, he was their father though. So that's kind of, it's more of a familial connection. I think Blade and Buffy are kind of unique in that Watcher Slayer kind of relationship.
That there's someone else that's really like invested.
So invested that Whistler actually trains a daughter off on the side that we meet in the third movie to continue the cause if Blade shall fall, I guess.
When did he have time to do this between all of his dying?
I don't know. Whole separate warehouse, I guess.
Yeah, I don't get that. I don't know. But anyways, for final question, I kind of want to ask more of a more personal thing. What type of vampires do you guys prefer? Do you guys like, there's so much different vampire lore out there. What would be your guys' favorite? I mean, we have True Blood. They're different from these vampires. These vampires are different from Interview with a Vampire. Which one do you guys gravitate more to?
I like the a little more modern vampires like Jerry and Colin Farrell's Jerry in Fright Night remake.
Chris Sarandon is the only Jerry Dandridge.
And like True Blood, like Alexander Skarsgård in True Blood, but with kind of, I guess, they're modern, but not as modern as like Lost Boys were. Like there's this, they're still got the old way mystique about them. I don't like them as floofy as Louis and Lestat. Like that's just way too much drama. Like they're just like some drama queens.
And I don't want them to, like, I enjoy the Twilight movies, but I don't want my vampire to sparkle. I don't, that is one aspect that I just don't understand, is the whole sparkling thing. But, you know, I do like the way that they conduct themselves, though. They're interesting vampires. They still live among humans. They walk around in the sunlight. They don't need a daylight ring like in the Vampire Diaries, which I do enjoy those vampires as well. I mean, you've got, I would be a vampire in a heartbeat. If someone said, would you like to be a vampire? Let me show you how. I would say, yes, sir. Please sign me up today. But do I want to be the vampire in Blade Trinity that, like, or in the second Blade where his weird little tentacles can? No, I don't want to be that kind of vampire. No, thank you.
No, I like the but one I agree. Able to pass. Pass yes. And, yes. And let's live your regular life, but you've got this dirty little secret in your basement.
Yeah. So I, for me, I would say my vampire would be from, like, on Vampire Diaries and the originals. They have daylight rings. They can walk around. They can be a part of the town. They're civil. But, you know, they still got the seductive power. They can still, you know, work their magic. They've got supernatural powers and they live forever.
I think the civility is what turns me off for Vampire Diaries.
They're just so nice. They go to high school. That's why the originals is a little better. They're grown up. They're in, right. You know, New Orleans. They're a little dirtier, a little grounded. Right,
yeah,
you know.
A little more grimy. That's what
yeah.
Yeah. I always like the bad vampire. I don't like the one that can hold back. I like the one that just goes for it.
Just do it, man.
So you prefer Angelus over Angel. I see.
Right. Like, well, I mean, at that point, you've already sold your soul's gone.
Right.
Yeah, I'm a long time ago, I wrote a book, a novel, Existing Dead, where it starts off as a zombie novel and it ends as a vampire novel. Like somewhere in the middle, everything just starts shifting and you start realizing like, oh, they're turning into something. But I always preferred for the vampires to be very not civil. Like The Strain, I really like how in the Strain they were very they didn't really care about who they were hurting. They just needed to feed. So, but then again, in The Strain, it ended up being some force that was making them do it, like some one main force. That's kind of how I always picture it, is that there's one main force that's controlling everything. If you find the main force, get rid of it, and it's gone. Isn't that what they did in Buffy? Like the first season, wasn't it when they kill the master, things were supposed to be different? Or am I just thinking
just
of that wrong?
Just that the Hellmouth closed. Right. Killing the master just closed the Hellmouth so that those terrible tentacle demons couldn't come out and strangle everyone.
That's all.
It's been a while. But yeah, that was our talk on vampires and Blade, movie from the 90s, which was a lot of fun. So, guys, thank you so much for coming on to the show.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Go ahead and give us your show again. Tell us what it's about, just so if people want to check it out, they can go ahead and find you.
Revisiting Sunnydale, a Buffy podcast all about Buffy the Vampire Slayer. We're going back to each episode one at a time. We're currently in season 6, and it can be found just about anywhere you get your podcasts, except for Spotify. You can go straight to the website, revisitingsunnydale.com.
Awesome. All right, guys. Thank you so much for listening, and I will see you next time for another episode. Have a good night.